This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Smart Food Popcorn. Some decisions aren't the best, like skipping ahead in your favorite podcast. Think of all the banter you'll miss, the lore in the making. Luckily, Smart Food Popcorn is a no-brainer. Deliciously tasty and available in a variety of fun flavors. It's a smart decision every time. Smart Food. Add smart. To learn more, visit smartfood.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Why Press Play. This episode, we're going to be talking about the Rob Reiner, Stephen King adaptation of the book Misery from 1990. And joining us to talk about it is Johnny from Disaster Artists. Hi, Johnny.
Hello.
Johnny does a podcast about disasters, dystopian futures, apocalypse scenarios in TV shows, movies, and computer games. And he and Shane... hash it out and try and survive.
Yeah,
see so how. So that they go through the survive. What is it? What's the tag?
We survived the apocalypse, so you don't have to.
Exactly, so you don't have to. And I mean, you have a bow and arrow, right?
I do.
If you were taken hostage by a crazy woman who wanted to break your legs to keep you making podcasts,
that would be the scenario. How does the arrow come into it?
The bow and arrow, you'd have to defend yourself. You do have a real bow and arrow.
Yeah, but I probably wouldn't be driving around with it in the back of my car. Unless, maybe if you're out hunting or something.
Would bow and arrow be like an everyday carry kind of thing in the future, do you think?
Well, you could carry it. There'd be no law against this.
I think you should start. It's like, Johnny's bow and arrow guy. Like, I think that's...
That'll become my thing.
Yeah. No one's going to fuck around with a guy with a bow and arrow.
People will finally notice me then and pay attention to me.
If anyone wants to get in contact with you online, Johnny, or your show, or wants to listen to your show, what's the crack?
DisasterArtistPodcast.com is our website, so you can find everything there.
Mm-hmm.
We're on Twitter, @DisasterArtist. Same on Facebook. We are on all the apps you can find.
All the social medias.
All of them.
And wherever you find podcasts, you can download
wherever you
the
find podcasts.
Cool. And you're @DisasterArtists on Twitter.
@DisasterArtists.
Cool. If you want to get in contact with Johnny or indeed the show, hit him up over there. If you want to get in contact with this show, Why Press Play, you can hit us up at info@whypressplay.com. We're also on all the social medias you can find: Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, all the Snapchats and the Google Pluses and all the ones that we...
MySpace,
Bebo. The Bebos and all that. And we also have a Reddit, a subreddit, so it's r/whypressplay. And we also have a website that has all the articles. It has this show, a bunch of articles about like reviews and stuff about Kathy Bates and James Caan and other little bits and pieces and tidbits and extra bits of information about Stephen King movies. And you can find out all that stuff, all the accompanying information on whypressplay.com. The show is also made possible by the lovely people over at Patreon. So it's patreon.com/thoseconspiracyguys. If you want to support the show, head to Patreon. It's a crowdfunding kind of a creator haven in the recent YouTube adpocalypse. A lot of people bailed over there to try and fund their show. We also have a show called Those Conspiracy Guys that's doing very well over there. And hopefully the show will be able to as well. Supporting creators helps us produce more media. So if you head over there and drop a dollar, you get loads of behind the scenes footage, you get extra videos and early release stuff. You also get access to the live show, and we do Google Hangouts and movie watch alongs. That's only going to be available for Patreon donators. You can get in at the ground floor for $2 a month, and it's half a cup of coffee and you get a month's worth of stuff for it. So head over there and try and support the show. We're also on Discord as well, which we do all that live show stuff and the interaction with our fans. So if you want to download the Discord app, the link for that will be on the website, and you can join in the chat with all the other people as well who love the show. Subscribe to this show if you've found this show by typing in Misery into iTunes or whatever podcast app.
People might have been looking up episodes about
it. It is an Oscar winner.
Yeah.
So if you type in Stephen King your misery and you found this show by accident, subscribe to us, and you get loads more movies recommended for you, TV shows and computer games as well. And we stream PS4, Steam and old school consoles on twitch.tv/ypressplay, and they're also on YouTube and Vidme as well. We like to try and discover all the old gems and dust off a few 16-bit classics and try and tell you a good way to waste your time. So with the new Mega Drive and the new SNES, kind of, I think they're like mini. Is that what they're called?
SNES Mini. Yeah.
The SNES Mini came out, and there's a bunch of games that you can get for that now. And like this retro game thing is really really kicking off. Has been going for the last few years. So we're going to go through a bunch of games to find out if you should shell out and play them. So this episode is going to be all about misery.
All about misery.
Just about, like, you know, student loans and living in a bedsit and only having one pair of jocks, and you have to turn them inside out, back to front, to get 4 days out of them. No, we're not.
You call that misery, I call that a party.
This episode is about the Stephen King book that was transposed into a movie in the very early 90s and directed by Rob Reiner after he saw The Shining and went, "Ooh, I want a Stephen King book."
Well, he had already directed a Stephen King adaptation, remember? Stand By Me.
Oh, yeah.
There's two directors that do good adaptations of Stephen King books, and they both have bald heads and grey beards. Because what's his name? Frank Darabont done Shawshank Redemption and Green Mile and The Mist. And Rayner done...
Green Mile is one of my favourites of all time. Yeah, and Stephen King is just such a great storyteller.
Yeah, yeah.
You nearly forgive him for assassinating John Lennon. Or so the story goes. We have a John Lennon episode over on Those Conspiracy Guys where you can hear how we accuse Stephen King of murder. No, we don't, Stephen. You're pure sound. I forgot. Robert. Yeah. Stand By Me. That's a novella from Four Seasons, right?
Yeah,
the body.
Yeah.
And this is a misery cracker. Mwah. Anytime, Christmas Day, fucking, you know, New Year's Eve, your birthday.
Before
a funeral, watch this movie.
I always watch it around Christmas.
Yeah, me as well.
I consider it a Christmas movie because there's snow in it.
Yeah. There's snow and emotional abuse. Like, it's just like being at home.
Yeah, yeah. Christmas. Actually, yeah, Jesus.
So we're going to do what we normally do on White Press Play, and we're going to get a 60-second rundown. The guy's going to be doing it. I mean, we're not looking for Dave Fanning or Scatman John or something like that, but we're trying to get as much into these 60 seconds with detail in the movie as possible so that it's a nice little, you know, in the first 10 minutes we can just go and it's all out. Give it your best shot. You've watched it 100 times. Let's see what we can do. So we're going to give Johnny 60 seconds. Are you ready for 60 second plots?
No, this is the second time and I already hate this.
For those of you that can't see him, which is everybody, he's holding his hands up and clenching his fists with anxiety for this.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to give you 60 seconds, Johnny, to give us the plot. Spoilers are, it's 1990, like you're not going to get. I think we're going to abandon the no spoilers thing for this show for a lot of parts of it. If you haven't watched this movie, you know, it's kind of evident what the whole thing is about. There's no, like, M. Night Shyamalan, surprise. Yeah. It's a fucking, you know, a psychological thriller. So we're going to give Johnny 60 seconds to go through Misery, directed by Rob Reiner, starting now.
So once again, it's a Stephen King adaptation. So of course the main character is a writer, played by James Caan. So Paul Chellum's his name. He's a successful author, wrote a series of books called Misery. He's just finished his latest entry into the Misery series, and he's driving back from Maine, somewhere in Maine.
20 seconds.
Where he goes to write all his books. And there's a terrible storm. He crashes. He's rescued by this woman who turns out to be his number one fan.
Crazy!
played by Kathy Bates. And Annie Wilkins is her name. And
40 seconds.
She brings him home. He's got broken legs. Phones her out. Bad storm. He can't get help, but she's going to nurse him back to health. She asks, can she read the manuscript to his new book? He says yes. He's really nice to her.
5 seconds.
She comes back. She's mad because he killed Misery off, and she's a big fan. And so she starts to go even more mental.
That's it for 60 seconds. It's hard. It's tough. It is tough.
Can you imagine if the med people pitched their movies this?
The fucking pressure of 60 seconds, man. But it's like an elevator pitch. It's like, I got this movie. What's it about? It's about this guy that does this thing. Oh, okay. but without like telling all the nuances, I think to try and sum it up in 60 seconds is pretty. Yeah. If you can do it, it's skill. Like, no one's done it really good yet. I'm going to try and do it for a couple in the next couple of shows.
The next time I'm going to be rehearsing it.
Yeah.
Because I didn't even realize that this is my second time. Maybe I should have been prepared this time.
Yeah.
But my third time,
you'll nail it on the third time. Yeah. It's basically like a kind of a kidnap I love you so much story, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And James Caan plays a writer who writes a bunch of books. And they're like a series of, you know, Mills and Boone's Women Rub Yourself books. I get the feeling from the cover and the whole thing. Like, it's like, oh, it's like a romantic, the thorn is throbbing member. Like, it's a bit.
Yeah, I think they're more like seen, I don't think they're the housewife porn that those are. Yeah. Now, again, I'm going by it because
the Able Stable Boy. By Mills and Boone.
In the novel, you see, you get...
A pirate's chest.
In the novel Misery, what he's writing while there is inserted. The pages from the manuscript are in the book.
Like. And what does the story tell?
Well, because it's the one he's forced to rewrite. So he has to bring Misery back to life. So it's this whole... Her being buried... That Misery was buried alive. And there's this whole, like... rescue mission to get her out.
Right, and you only get like a tiny taste of that in some of Kathy Bates' comments as the film goes on. Well, that's the way. There's always like another level to a Stephen King story where they'll take you off into, you know, a separate world and describe a whole other thing. Like with a movie, you have to maintain a narrative and keep the main characters in direct focus. But Stephen King is able to weave like this kind of sub-world in most of his books. So you're an avid reader and you love Stephen King, right?
Yeah,
me
big,
as well.
Big Stephen King fan.
Oh, yeah. I used to hoover them shits up when I was a young lad.
Yeah, Misery. Like, when I read Misery the first time, I think it's the only book I've done it with where I read it in one sitting.
Yeah.
I just sat down, read it, and then...
You were like, yummy.
It was like 9 hours later and I closed the book and I was like, wow.
That was class.
That's a good book when you're like...
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm pretty... No, I'm sure I used the bathroom, but I don't think I ate during it.
Yeah. No, it's... The Stephen King books do have a bit of more on them. I did the same with Needful Things.
That's great.
Probably Carrie. It's quite short.
Misery isn't a huge book either, but it'd be a bit bigger than Carrie. But,
Rose Madder is another one of my Stephen King favourites. And that's like a big, thick weapon of a motherfucker.
That's like It and The Stand.
Yeah, it's hardcore. Territory. And The Stand obviously was one of my childhood favourites.
Yeah,
and
that's my favourite.
The TV movie adaptation as well is just like, mwah, love that shit. Randall Flagg, man.
Yeah, was the TV adaptation good?
Yeah, it's like 4 90-minute movies.
Yeah, I remember enjoying it when I was younger, but I'd say it's one of those ones where you're like, nah, never go back.
It's late 80s cheese, but it has all the elements of the book and all the characters are there, and you know, we'll definitely do an episode on The Stand. Like, it's me and Neil Rochford, I tell you, my little brother. Big love for that book, man.
Nice.
So with Misery then, the story of Paul Sheldon, he writes that Misery Chastain is the name of the character in his self-titled novel. So it's like Misery's desire and, you know, Misery's Chance,
Misery's Company,
yeah. And then like the final book is called Misery's Child, and in Misery's Child she dies during childbirth, and Annie Wilkes is the number one fan, and Paul Sheldon is driving, he usually goes up to the cabin, right?
To it's his writing retreat, it's where he wrote his first novel. So
it's like one of these writer's habits,
and like a superstition, the same thing as the one cigarette he smokes after he completes each book.
And he has a glass of Dom Perignon.
Or
Dom Perignon, as Kathy Bates
does. I like that idea of having those kind of rituals.
Yeah. Hmm. I do that every time I finish an episode. I edit it. I put it up. I eat a chocolate cake and I have a wank and then I go to sleep.
Hmm.
That's the way it goes.
It's a nice ritual.
I mean, it's like, you know, a little reward for myself.
So
it's a... It's one of these kind of, I think, a very self-referential or a self-examinatory kind of look into a writer's mind. And a lot of Stephen King stuff is set in Maine. A lot of it is set in...
It's always a writer.
That Northeast, it's a writer. It's, you know, it's very much write what you know.
Yeah.
And he has like he has kind of amalgamated all of his craziest fans into Annie Wilkes.
Yeah.
Like the woman that Kathy Bates played. And she won an Oscar for this.
Well deserved.
Absolutely, yeah. She's crazy.
Did you ever hear the story about you know about Stephen King's accident he had a few years ago when he's rammed into by the van?
No.
Did you never hear about that?
No.
Oh, he was about like, it's probably 10 years ago at this point. He was like, he was out for a walk or a jog or something, and a van plowed into him.
Oh, shit.
Like, have you ever seen Kingdom Hospital, the show he wrote? You know the scene where your man's running and he gets plowed into?
That's autobiographical.
That's why it's, yeah. Like, he was destroyed. And I think like he was like maybe in a coma for a few days, or at least like out because it was such a bad accident.
Yeah.
But when he woke up, there was a nurse tucking like sheets in, and her first thing she said was like, "Oh my God, you're awake. I'm one of your biggest fans." And then she just stopped and she's like, "Oh, but don't worry, this isn't going to be like Misery."
Brilliant.
But is that the worst thing you would want to hear if you're Stephen King and you're waking up in a hospital? Like, he probably didn't even know he was in a hospital at that point.
Yeah.
He just saw a woman tucking him in.
"I'm your biggest fan." And then she brings out like a wooden block and a sledgehammer. Yeah, that's fucked up, dude. I didn't know that. So yeah, I mean, this movie is definitely Oscar fodder. Like, everybody who's involved in it all had Oscar nominations, and Kathy Bates won the Oscar for this movie.
Yeah.
Like, Rob Reiner nominated for When Harry Met Sally. James Caan nominated. Richard Farnsworth is nominated for an Oscar as well, and Lauren Bacall. Like, so this is like real top tier cast for this movie, you know.
Wait, did you say Reiner got nominated for When Harry Met Sally?
Yeah, in 1990. Yeah.
So he directed both the same year.
It was the 1991 Oscars. Misery was in.
Yeah.
So he did Harry Met Sally, I guess, in 89, and it was in the 1990 Oscars.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just misunderstood what you meant. Sorry.
And like a real strong cast, like James Caan. It's mostly like a two-hander between James Caan and Kathy Bates.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But Richard Farnsworth plays the sheriff, and I think like instrumental to the pace and to the intrigue in the movie. He's the one that drives.
He's
the
fantastic.
Entire script, like, yeah.
Him and his wife, their relationship.
Yeah, so
and,
good. Man.
Yeah, they're fantastic. It feels like a Coen's Brothers movie when it's them.
Frances Sternhagen plays his wife, Virginia, and she's such a little saucy old mare, you know.
Brilliant.
It's so good. There's one scene where they're driving in the van, and they're out like looking for James Caan, like Paul Sheldon's car. So piece by piece, like, Farnsworth's character Buster puts the mystery together to go like, okay, well, he was up at the thing and he checked out Tuesday night, and he's like straight away like, "Virginia, what night was that blizzard?" It's like, "Oh, I think it was Tuesday, Buster." Like, it was this kind of old school, the gumshoe.
Yeah.
And they're driving out, and she puts her hand on his knee, and he's like, "Stop it, Virginia. When we're in the car, you're my deputy." And she's like, "Well, I'd love to get my sheriff back home in bed." Like, she's just saucy old mare, you know.
That's great.
But like a cool kind of like sassy, sarcastic kind of, Buster kind of relationship. And very, I think, akin to the other characters that Stephen King writes. Like in Needful Things, I think that was one of the best interlocking like character intricacies that he'd ever done, because it was the whole point of it was there was a shop in town and everyone was connected and everyone was doing stuff to everybody else, you know, to get what they want from the devil. And recreated in an episode of Rick and Morty, which is absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
But like the way he writes his characters, there are these quintessentialities to the characters that he writes that are obviously based on people he knows from around, Castle Rock.
I think that's why everything's set in Maine, because he's writing people he knew,
and like the guys who drive the car into the pub and all this kind of stuff. So this like couple who are, you know, law enforcement are definitely have to be taken from life that he's known.
Oh, yeah.
Like this sassy, sarcastic woman, and then the old, you know, mustachioed. Like, he looks like kind of like an old cowboy who settled down, you know, or something.
Yeah. And I think he's appeared in other King books. I think the same character,
Buster. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember which ones though.
Yeah, he's the sheriff in.
Oh, the Dead Zone is the.
The Dead Zone. He's Danforth Keaton. Danforth Buster Keaton. He's also in Needful Things. He's the sheriff there as well.
Yeah.
Like, and. He's much, much younger in that, I guess.
Yeah.
So Misery happens in the timeline after needful things. It's a weird, like, it is a kind of a King universe.
Oh yeah, know? Absolutely. Like, I mean, even in the book, they, like, Annie refers to the fire at the Overlook Hotel.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And there's also another sheriff, like, in Storm of the Century, which is Buster Carver. So obviously Buster is a character name that he prefers, you know. But yeah, I mean, like, one of the integral supporting characters, like, if you're talking about, like, a best supporting cast, that character Buster.
Yeah, and it's not a huge supporting cast either, no. Like, but
5 scenes max, yeah. I'd say. But just, it drives that intrigue and it drives that urgency.
So memorable.
When they're looking for Paul Sheldon. So basically, that Paul Sheldon crashes his car, Kathy Bates pulls him out, brings him home, puts him in the bed, straps him up, gives him loads of pills, and she's a nurse, so she helps him, to nurse him back to health. So tell us then about the book that he writes. So Misery's Child is his most recent book.
Yeah, well, there's not a whole lot to say about it. Like, it doesn't, the original, his manuscript he was happy with and completed, they never, in neither King's novel or the film, they really tell you much about that.
Yeah.
It's not until he's forced to rewrite the one that Annie wants that you actually get any sense of what the books are.
So what happens then? Like, Misery's Child is the last in the series of these Misery books that he's, like, reluctantly famous for.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't want to be, I want to write something else. And
I wonder where King got that idea of a writer. That's
Apparently Misery was supposed to be a Bachman book. He was writing on Richard Bachman's name.
Yeah.
And there's like a whole set of books before. And The Dark Tower, which is about to come out now, starring Idris Elba, is like a Stephen King joint. And he wrote them as Richard Bachman. And he was going to sign...
No, he didn't write The Dark Tower as Bachman.
No, but like there's like a set of Bachman books that come out. The Dark Tower is Stephen King.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like from the characters that were created in that era when he was Richard Bachman.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like,
and this was supposed to be a Bachman book, and they found out that it was him. His cover was blown, and he released it as Stephen King, and it blew up. And it got turned into a movie, and it was all, you know. So already he was destined for immortality, I guess.
Yeah, like, he for people that don't know about, like, he created Richard Bachman because he had, like, maybe 5 best-selling books at that point.
Yeah.
And he was wondering, was he actually still writing good books? Or were they just by... Yeah. And so he created the alter ego. But then he ended up writing very different style of books because he was like, nobody knows... I can say whatever I want in these books because... Who's going to get in trouble? This person writing them doesn't exist. Like,
they don't
and
know
it's weird. When you read like a Running Man, you would it just reads like a different writer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like it's so much closer to like it's a dystopian sci-fi. It's closer to 1984 than it is.
But I think it's also Stephen King stretching his muscles and going, I don't have to set this book in Castle Rock, Maine now.
Yeah.
I can have it in the future. I can have it in the past. It can be like people getting killed. All these different types of characters, and it's not like the down home, New England. Old fair that he's used to.
It's almost like where Stephen King novels were very much horror novels, his Bachman stuff was kind of like terror in a way.
Much darker.
Yeah. Have you ever read The Long Walk?
No.
That's fucking great. Like,
I have to go back over my Richard Bachman, you know?
Yeah, it's really good. Mm. It's a dystopia. It's like The Hunger Games where teenagers have to take part in this long walk.
Oh, brilliant.
Like, it's really weird, but it's very good.
I think that like his fame and stuff like that was starting to get to him when he started to make Richard Bachman, and not unlike Garth Brooks when he made his own alter ego. Remember that? He was a goth, yeah. He didn't want to write country music anymore, so he was all like into like new metal and stuff. It's very weird. But he wanted.
What was his name?
I don't know. Can't remember.
It was something like Zach something. Yeah, like it was a real.
Something like cringe-tastic. But Stephen King, like, he'd already had some problems with drugs.
Yeah.
Namely, probably cocaine will be a big one that he was.
Yeah. Like, he had a few. He was an alcoholic, but before all of it.
And this book kind of sounds like. And because he had that whole Bachman. I don't know, existential crisis of like, you know, am I only, it like Misery is really probably like the birth of a big part of his ongoing then self-esteem going forward after this book.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like at that point he was having an existential crisis. He's got, are people buying my books just because they have King on the front of them and they know what's going to be like quintessential horror, like typical horror books, and they know what to expect and it's just the same old rump.
Yeah.
And he tried to throw a spanner in the works, and he wrote this with it being released as a Bachman book in mind, so it doesn't have that exacting Stephen King style.
Yeah, yeah.
But it still has all of the hallmarks, and I guess like some of the places were changed after he was outed as being Stephen King.
Yeah, yeah. So he, yeah, because obviously if he was writing under Bachman, he wouldn't have included exactly. Buster yeah. in the original draft.
So it ended up being kind of like autobiographical. Like Paul Sheldon is Stephen King, who is like a writer who's plagued by a character or a set of books that he has been typified as yeah. to writing, and he's the opening scenes is him talking to his agent going, I don't want to write this shit no more, I want to try something else. And then the next scene he's up in the cabin and he's, you know, finishing the thing, having his smoke, having his Dom Perignon, and he finishes this book called Untitled, and it's like masterpiece, like this is my next big thing. And then he's driving to try and get it back, and I'm going, dude, like why are you driving in the snow, just hang on for a day, like just it's a fucking blizzard. Car tips over, Kathy Bates comes out, takes him out and ties him to the bed and destroys his book and makes him write another one.
Yeah.
After she reads like Destiny's, and you said Destiny's Child. Tell me what you think about
Misery's
me.
Child. Yeah. Or Untitled, which
I'm going on Beyonce.
Yeah.
Misery's Child was his last released book, where Misery died in childbirth, and Kathy Bates' character, Annie Wilkes, wasn't happy with that. She's like, rewrite it. And she burnt his book and tied him to the bed, and he had broken legs and he couldn't go no place. And this, in later interviews, Stephen King said was his, like an embodiment of his drug addiction.
Yeah, yeah.
That like, the ease of, you know, slipping back into these old ways and just writing the same old shit and kind of retconning your old book. Like she died in the end. And then in the next part of the book, like she's, you know, in the coffin going like, I gotta get out of here and all.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just so, like we need another sequel. So when you see it kind of laid out in a human way like that, like Stephen King is going, Kathy Bates is my drug addiction. Just go and make it easy on yourself, dude. Just get it and
yeah,
let's not try anything too hard. Like,
and most of King's books, especially from that period, are about addiction. Like The Shining is completely just about addiction. Because a lot of people only really associate the, or have seen the movie, like, but the book is more about a man trying to save his family.
Yeah.
And he does everything he can for them, and then something
And then it
else.
Drives him crazy. Yeah.
It's more like an outside force.
The ineffable force, yeah, yeah.
Whereas in the film, Jack Nicholson's already crazy. Yeah. You know? Like, as good as a film as that is, because it's visually stunning and Kubrick's a master, probably the worst cast than ever. Because, like, first scene, you're like, oh, Jack Nicholson's in it. This guy's going to be crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Like, he's already crazy.
Yeah.
Well, apparently Jack Nicholson was supposed to be in this movie, in Misery. And he had to turn down the part because he didn't want to go through another Stephen King adaptation.
That's, yeah.
And he didn't want to relive what he had just relived with Kubrick in a fucking, you know, some weird hotel up in Colorado in the mountains for 2 months, where he's making Shelley Duvall cry, like having nervous breakdowns on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And Jack Nicholson had to watch that shit. He's like, no, I'm not doing that shit again, man. You can just keep your Stephen King adaptation. And he turned it down, and James Caan like jumped at the chance after it was offered to 10 other motherfuckers as well. Like,
I can actually see Jack Nicholson in that role.
Oh, absolutely.
Well. Like better than I can see. Like he'd suit that better than
you're coming in here and you're gonna break my legs. Like that's not. He's not. I think James, like no one could have done it now. Like
no,
now
yeah, of course, yeah, yeah, yeah. Though, have you seen It's Now a Play?
Yes, and Bruce Willis.
Yeah, and it's meant to be awful.
Yeah, it is awful. But that's only from 2015.
He can't learn lines, like, no. So he wears an earpiece.
Oh my god, Bruce Willis. What the fuck are you doing?
But great, like I would love to see a play of Misery.
I saw a version of this done in Wexford in the Art Centre.
Oh, really?
In like 2005. And it could all be done in one room, and you can have like the helicopter sounds and the guy comes in and all. It's all like a one room play, like really, really well.
Nice.
So it could be done. But it's so weird when I was reading through who was offered this part. So usually on White Press, they'd be doing alternative cast.
Yeah.
So for this, like James Caan, class. Really, really good. But like you said, Jack Nicholson was offered. Also who was offered, Kevin Kline, Michael Douglas, Harrison Ford, Dustin Hoffman, Robert De Niro, Richard Dreyfuss, Gene Hackman, Robert Redford, and Warren Beatty all declined this role. And finally, it landed on James Caan's desk, and he went, yeah, I'll have it.
He's fucking lucky they declined.
And also, who was considered before, like all those guys were offered, but they also considered Ed Harris, like young Ed Harris, Jeff Daniels.
Okay.
So this is pre Dumb and Dumber fame.
Actually, I can really see Jeff Daniels. That's a, that would actually be really good.
But young Jeff Daniels, arachnophobia age Jeff Daniels.
Yeah, yeah.
And Ed O'Neill, famous for Al Bundy in Married with Children.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Wow. Can you imagine him being tied to the bed and he's like, "You got any more soup? Like, you call this coffee?" Giving Kathy Bates abuse. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
But James Caan's like pathetic performance. He's so pathetic in it, and his reactions to pain and stuff like that are really, really good.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, and the only actor, like, if we're doing the segment alternative casting?
Oh, we can do it, yeah.
Like, I would actually see Bryan Cranston. That'd be the only person Jesus. I could see being equally as good in that role.
That would be really good.
Because he can do that pathetic, like, he done that as Walter White before he becomes Heisenberg, like, and he's just a fantastic actor and can do anything.
I'd love to see, like, Seth Green do it.
Right,
but just because I want to see Kathy Bates break his ankles with a sledgehammer.
Who, if they were to, because this is getting a remake in a few years.
All for shizzle.
Like,
if they were to remake it in the future.
Not that we condone that.
Yeah,
but it's going to get remade.
I think James McAvoy would probably get a good turn at it because he's done Split. He's also done.
That's a good.
Filth. He's done a lot of these, like, very deep. Psychologically disturbed characters, and I think he can have that kind of to and fro kind of psychological thing.
He'd actually be really good. The thing with James McAvoy is what age is he? He's probably 35,
early 40s, maybe late 30s. Yeah,
yeah, but he still has such a young. I wouldn't be able to believe that he's wrote a series of books. Even though he's an actor who's made, he's got like, he's been acting for like 20 years.
You can believe, when you watch Filth, man, you can believe he's done all that shit.
Yeah.
Like he's
but I can believe that. He's too good looking to be a writer, first of all, I think.
Maybe. What about like, now that he's gone all skinny, John Goodman could play James Caan's role.
Yeah. He's probably a bit too old now though. Like he wasn't even, have you seen 10 Cloverfield Lane?
Yeah, I didn't like it.
But it's kind of a similar movie in that whole one room. But he's almost like he's playing, John Goodman is kind of playing a version
of Kathy Bates.
Of Kathy Bates' character in that. And which is funny that you mentioned
the highs and lows, yeah.
Yeah.
I think somebody who could play the James Caan character from like contemporary actors, James McAvoy, I would love to see Ewan McGregor do it.
You got it, yeah.
Yeah. Or somebody of that like body type. I'm trying to think of like a James Caanian type.
Yeah, yeah.
Character, you know?
I think I like your James McAvoy. I think that's a very, very good cast.
It would be really good. Who would you have as Kathy Bates? Because the original role was offered to Jessica Lange.
Yeah,
who we saw in American Horror Story over the last while.
She's such a good actress. She's like
crazy.
She could have done that.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Like in American Horror Story, like that's such a wide range of different characters she played.
Fucking
like
amazing.
That evil nun in season 2 in the mental hospital.
Yeah. And you know what? I detest that series.
But you don't like it, no?
I hate it, but I've watched 4 of them because she's that fucking good.
Watched all 4 seasons?
Well, all she was in.
Yeah, yeah, I didn't watch season 5 in the hotel.
I think I tuned out. Yeah, well, I don't think she's in that.
Kathy Bates is in it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But Jessica Lange
is not. Like, absolutely stellar like performance, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But absolutely. And it was also offered to Angelica Houston, who won the Oscar that year. She was doing another movie and got the Oscar for it. And it was offered to Bette Midler. And some say...
kind of see that, yeah.
Some say... Yeah, because Bette Midler, like, bit crazy.
Yeah,
but she did the Witches movie. What was that called?
Which
Hocus
is
Pocus.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Hocus Pocus.
Instead that year. And it was also offered to Barbara Streisand, who I think at the time didn't probably have the chops to do crazy.
No, but could now.
Could absolutely do that now.
Yeah.
So who would you have then in a olden day adaptation and a modern day one.
Oh, so if I was in the '80s, I was adapting it in the '80s.
Yeah, if you were having to cast it instead of Kathy Bates, who would you have?
I mean, I really want to know, because going back to that time, I'm not sure there is anybody else you can really pick out. Like, it'd be easier to, and it's so hard to like to recast Kathy Bates and that.
Okay, so if you were to do like the modern day adaptation of Misery, who would you have then? Because like, you can't recast Kathy Bates. Like, that's her seminal performance. Yeah. That's like her Oscar. That's, you know, that made her career a bit. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
If you had a modern day version, who do you think you'd have?
So this is my version. It's got
we have James McAvoy in the bed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or possibly Walter White.
Or possibly Bryan Cranston. Yeah.
Yeah. Why did I just call him by his character's name? So it's such a dick thing to do. Yeah. It's not like he's ever going to hear it. Okay, that it's so tough because like modern actors is just
don't have them Kathy Bates chops. Man.
Okay, if we're going James McAvoy, because he's still, would you go a bit young? Well, I mean, Kathy Bates is pretty young, and you see,
she's in her early 30s.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not thinking
fresh face.
I would probably, you see, I would try, like, I hope the remake does a remake doesn't do this, but I would try kind of go another direction, because it's a movie. Like, if you're redoing it, it's a story that's been told in a book. Somebody's already made a very good adaptation. Now you're kind of allowed to go in another direction. Yeah. So I'd probably have the lead actually be more attractive, like an attractive person you wouldn't suspect to be this medical.
Like Zooey Deschanel or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But you wouldn't have
not, yeah, but I wouldn't get Zooey Deschanel. I don't think she'd be good. But Anne Hataway
would
actually
do
just
crazy.
Get Anne Hataway and just make, like, she would ugly herself up for it.
Yeah.
Do a shizzle. Or Charlize Theron.
I was just going to say, Charlize Theron would be great at crazy.
Yeah.
Or Emily Blunt.
Yeah. They're all people that are pretty great at anything.
Like, she was great in Sicario and she's a crazy bitch.
Yeah.
In it.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, big time. And who would you have then for Buster the show?
Oh, shit. That's actually even harder to recast.
Isn't it?
Ted Danson.
Yeah. Now that you say it, you could just, yeah. Or Tony Danza.
Well, like, have you watched Fargo, the series?
No. I love the movie. I watched the first episode of the series. I was like, no. It's the same from the Dusk Till Dawn series.
You
just stretch them all out, you know.
Oh, but it's not. It's
Fargo's different, I know, but it's just, I don't.
It's fantastic.
Is it good? Yeah.
It's fantastic. It's one of the best TV shows.
I must watch it for this show.
If you've watched American Horror, you can watch Fargo.
Okay. Okay.
But Ted, in season two, Ted Danson plays a sheriff, and that's kind of what, there's a lot of scenes of him driving around in the snow, so right. That image just stayed with me.
Yeah, because we're coming back into a 90s revival now these days where there's a lot of stuff being rehashed and redone and a lot of reboots and a lot of, and then also like the stuff like Stranger Things, which is big on Netflix, like it's like that late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, and that's essentially, Stranger Things is almost like what would have happened if Stephen King wrote a series for Steven Spielberg to direct in the 80s, and that's what, like, even the Stranger Things font is the Stephen King font from his books. And now you have like fucking It coming out, the remake of It.
Dark that's Car. The thing. It's a new dawn for those kind of remakes and stuff. And Misery was like one of the, like, a fucking, it's Oscar winner. Like it's. So I think that those ones are all going to start coming back now with the special effects and with the stuff that they couldn't do then.
Exactly.
So I mean, like, you're talking about like visceral destruction of, you know, James Caan's feet, like with sledgehammers, and the car crash and the different, like the fight. Yeah. The fight at the end was just, like James Caan said in interviews, like Kathy Bates was so fragile then, and she wasn't the fucking hard ass that she's known to be now.
Yeah.
And she was roaring, crying for hours before and after all those scenes because it was just so emotionally triggering for her, draining as well. Like,
wow.
And I wouldn't know. Like, would special effects and would CGI and stuff make a huge difference to that? I know when I watched it the other day when we were getting ready for the show, like the blood and the kind of the special effects, like the fight stuff, and you know, when you get a couple of knocks and she gets a rap at a typewriter and all. It seems kind of janky, it's a very close up
of just the contact, and then
it's not as amazing as even some TV shows are now. You watch that stuff, you're like, fucking hell, it's unreal.
Yeah, well, there's differences in the book and the film that were probably changed for practicality. Like, so in the book, she cuts off his feet.
Yeah, and in the play that I watched in Wexford, she cuts off his feet.
Oh, okay.
So it kind of stayed to that. But it wouldn't, I mean, it obviously wouldn't make for the finale of the, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But I think, like, I think that was done for practical purposes because they would then have to, like,
pay for
CG,
all the prosthesis.
Yeah, you'd have to do a fire scump on it and remove his feet for the rest of the film.
Yeah.
But it's a great mistake, or a great thing that they had to do it, because visually, which is worse, watching someone getting their foot cut off or that fucking seeing the hammer smash against the ankle and a bit, like, it's so much, I'd rather that in real life, I would rather that happen to me than my feet be amputated.
Yeah,
but to watch it, the visual, the one they done in the film is
so visually
more.
We see feet being cut off every day, man. Fuck it, like, we're, you know, we've all been in a butcher's.
You might. Yeah.
We know the shit happens. Like, yeah. I think though that the CGI or the special effects that you could have, like the stuff you see in like Walking Dead and Game of Thrones and stuff like that, like it's TV, but it's, you know, movie budget, yeah. TV. And if they were to recreate Misery, they would do the foot chopping off stuff.
I'd say they probably would, even just to as a reason to remake it, to be, yeah, like, we have to do,
let's
some
go
stuff
all
different
out for this stuff. Yeah.
I'd still hope, like, I hope they would never remake it because it'd be pointless and it probably wouldn't be very good.
It depends on the actors. I mean, there's a whole group of people, and this is what the show is all about, is bringing those movies that people haven't seen.
Yeah, yeah.
And because they're like, oh, that's fucking, you know, like, a lot of kids, like, if they're 21 and you're listening to this show and you're going, movie from 1990, like, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's fucking 8 years before you were born. Like, I know, yeah, when I was born in, like, 1983, and I wasn't watching any movies from the early 70s until I was in my mid to late 20s.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I wasn't bothered. I was like, fuck that shit. Yeah. Like, there's loads of stuff being made. And now we're in the age of peak TV. We're in the age of, like, movie remakes and all this kind of stuff. Like, there's people out there that have seen the new RoboCop that haven't seen the old RoboCop.
Yeah.
Like, that's criminal.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if you're looking at something like Misery and it gets remade, like, people aren't ever going to look at the new It and then go back and look at the old It and enjoy it as much. Like, Pennywise, played by Tim Curry, is like a childhood trauma that I would never ask to return.
Yeah,
like, I'm,
yeah,
like, I fucking love being scared by Tim Curry and his weird, creepy smile and turn into a spider. Yeah. And, you know, that's a memory that'll live with me forever.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're watching this new version of It, and for a lot of people, that's going to be their first, you know, dalliance with a Stephen King adaptation, because there hasn't been books made. Like, The Dark Tower is about to come out. Like, that's going to be, and it's the first time it's ever been made. Cool. Yeah. But
looks awful though.
Yeah, no, but if they're going to be remaking Misery, that's the first time they're going to get a chance to dance with.
But I was, because, like, I think Misery is a perfect film.
Yeah.
Whatever about, like, for the time,
but it could be done way better with a higher budget, and
I don't think so.
The special effect. No, I'm saying, looking at it from a producer's point of view, you go, like, we could do it again and get as good at actors.
Oh, I'm not saying there what, like, I 100% think within 4 years there's going to be a remake.
Absolutely.
I'm just saying, I hope there isn't.
Chalk it down. That's a
4 years,
a Johnny guarantee.
Either, or no, actually, you know what? It won't be remade as a film. It'll end up being a TV show.
No, it couldn't. It's not a long enough story.
Maybe not it specifically, but I think they'll do
a 4-part thing or something.
Yeah, well, there's talk they'll do like a series. It's like Castle Rock as a TV series.
Oh, shit.
And just be an anthology thing.
And
I
redo Stand By Me and redo Needful Things.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that's what they're going to do. And Misery will just
Castle
be
Rock,
included.
That is a project.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's something coming out called Castle Rock, but haven't really revealed what. And it's J.J. Abrams and Stephen King present. Well,
look, this is the thing. I remember reading that now that you say it. And I was going to say earlier on, we were talking about, like, the redux of that whole 90s thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I think Super 8 was J.J. Abrams' audition.
Oh, yeah,
to,
yeah,
Steven Spielberg and to Stephen King, yeah, to go, look, I want to fucking recreate my childhood and I want to use today's technology to make those kind of things. And now the cunt gets to do Star Wars and Star Trek. And he gets to make all of the Stephen King universe come to life.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it will be done.
Yeah, yeah, it'll be back in some form.
Absolutely. I do think that Kathy Bates is irreplaceable, but if you were to remake it, I mean, I don't think that they're going to hold back off all of the crazy special effects that you get. Like, the crash is going to be amazing. His legs are going to be disgusting. They're going to do the whole chop off the legs thing.
Yeah, they'll up the ante because that's the only reason. If you're going to remake it, you have to do something different. So, yeah.
And the angles and stuff like that, you can think about how you know, film cameras were able to move. And in a house like that, they're using an actual house. So the practicalities of getting jibs in and having all these like dolly shots of James Caan on the wheelchair coming in and out of the sitting room and knocking over the porcelain doll and trying to get into the cabinet and all of that stuff that when you watch is very simple. Like it's all chest high kind of shots. It's all like medium one shots. There's there's no great amount of, you know, cinematic amazing technology or anything like that.
No,
but now you have all these gimbals and fucking all this stuff that you can really turn that into like a massively intense experience of him going from the bedroom, unlocking the door with a hairpin, going into the sitting room and reading the memory book and finding all the bits of paper where it tells that Kathy Bates' character actually killed a load of babies and this kind of stuff, you know, where he finally realizes this bitch cray, I got to get out of here, you know? And he builds up the whole thing of, I'm going to poison her, and he puts the... Like, that's a really good scene.
That's
probably my favourite scene in the film. Okay, well, yeah, on White Press Play, we like to do these, like, what's your favourite scene? And my favourite scene in Misery is when... It's a kind of a build-up over the whole, like, a subplot in that Stephen King story where he's keeping all the pills. She's giving him these pain pills, and he's keeping them all in a hole in the mattress. And he takes them all out, and one by one, he starts like smelling them and tasting them to see if they'll have any aftertaste. And he puts them in a little paper sachet, and then he goes, starts licking Annie's arse and going, "Oh, I'd love to have dinner with you." And she's like,
to celebrate
finishing the book and stuff. And he works really hard to get the book done, to have the dinner, to do all this. And at a point before this in time, Annie is closing the door, and she turns around and goes, You done some cock-a-doody stuff. You want to be careful, because if I die, you die. You know, don't be trying that shit. And he gets all the powder and he pours the glass of wine and then asks her to go do something. I can't remember. It was like, can I have some sauce or something like that? She gets up from the table. He puts all the stuff. He puts all the... Or gets get a candle and make it romantic. That's what he asks her to do, right? Yeah. And then she comes back with the candle and he's at there putting all the stuff in her wine. And she puts the candle on, she knocks the glass over, and there's like about I think it's like a 6 second shot of James Caan just going like,
"It's
what the fucking fuck?" Like for weeks he's planning this.
Oh, you just see like that look in his eye where, it's heartbreaking.
It's gut wrenching.
Yeah.
You're like, fuck, man. And at the same time, you wonder, what happens if he succeeded? She'd die. How would he get out? Like, it's not... What would be the crack there, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think you'd think, like, even if I just crawl for a while outside somehow, like, anything's better than that. But yeah, it's such a heartbreaking scene.
That's
because you're just watching somebody who's all hope has just gone by just something completely accidental.
Like, normal.
And
I was watching it with Claire, and Claire said, it's always the psychopaths that get the best look. Do you know what I mean?
To
not get caught, like,
And that's kind of,
you know, how many times do you get away with it?
True, when you hear about like serial killers who got a parking ticket at the scene of the crime but never got caught, like,
this is it. I also like the scene where he's looking through a thing called Memory Lane, which is a red leather bound book that Annie Wilkes keeps.
That's my favorite scene.
Oh my god, tell us about it then.
Well, it's just it's the discovery of her ledger, her trophies, essentially,
her murderous past and.
But it's the name. It's, you see Memory Lane.
Yeah.
And then he opens it and you see like the newspaper article.
And the music when it shows Memory Lane. It's
shit. It's really disturbing. Yeah.
He goes through a set of newspaper clippings that basically detail Annie Wilkes' descent into madness. But it starts off, the first clipping is like her father, who is a pharmacist, dies by falling down the stairs while Annie was aged just 11.
Yeah.
And I paused it to read the thing, and it's one paragraph that's just copy-pasted like 8 times.
They always do that in movies.
It's very funny.
Yeah.
And it's kind of implied, I believe. I don't know. I haven't read the book in a very long time. I can't remember if it's implied in the book, but like that Annie pushed her dad down the stairs and murdered him. So she was murderous from that young age.
Yeah, I think that's implied in the book too.
Yeah,
I think
just it's, implied. It's not.
Well, he never... Jeez. I think it is only implied. There's more confirmed, like the stuff she done in the hospital is all confirmed in the book.
Yeah,
completely.
She killed a bunch of babies.
Yeah, and she talks.
Her husband got killed as well. And there was another, when she was in school, a girl she died with was in one of the paper clippings.
Yeah.
And then when she was in college, her roommate in college died by falling down the stairs when Annie was just 20. So in nursing college. And then a bunch of babies started dying. And then she got arrested. And she was brought to court. And she was obviously convicted for the deaths of these babies. And apparently, Stephen King based Annie Wilkes' character on a real story of a woman called Janine Jones, who was a nurse who killed 50 babies in the United States. And it was just like that part of the character to bring into this. So that's why she's living out in the middle of no place on a mountainside after she's been released from jail or whatever. And I mean, you can see the crazy comes out in her often for absolutely no reason.
Yeah.
And that's not a crazy bitch in like 2 seconds.
Just to go back to why I think it's how I think it's confirmed in the book that she killed the father is because she's got loads of money.
Yeah.
In the book. Like, I can't remember. Do they mention her other house in the film at all?
No.
Okay, yeah. She's got another house up the mountains that she goes. You know when
she leaves him alone for ages and...
Yeah, yeah. Like when she gets depressed when it rains. So she goes to her happy home or something
I better go to that other place where I don't keep the bullets.
Yeah, that's kind of it, yeah.
But that's alluded to in the film as
when
well.
When she comes in. And I think that might be my favorite scene because she's fucking great.
Yeah, man.
Like when she comes in and it's raining outside, a different character. She's just like a different
actress.
Yeah, yeah.
The light has gone out of her eyes.
I don't want to watch this again. I only watched it the other day. Like,
this is it, man. You would watch it again, and it's only 93 minutes. Yeah, what it is.
Best films are that length,
man.
They don't make films like that no more. The remake will be 2.5 hours. Like,
yeah. Well, the James Caan character, like we've talked a lot about Kathy Bates, like the James Caan character is amazing, but very subtly played, and his oh shit, I'm fucked smile is like, if you're not into it, if you're not like willing to go, yeah, okay, I'm into James Caan, it probably looks a bit shit, because he's just like, okay, like shit-eating grin or whatever.
Yeah, he's got his specific... style.
Absolutely. But Warren Beatty, like the reason he declined to play the part of Paul Sheldon was because he read the script and he thought that the character was a loser. Like he was just like, he didn't want to be associated with that losery type of character.
Okay.
Especially after the hobbling scene where he's just like a pathetic, like
pain
ridden, compliant.
Warren Beatty wasn't a fan of just acting. Like.
Well, I mean, Sirian. He wasn't into that.
Did
you just pretend, Warren? He's like, no. Has to be me. Like, Dick Tracy is a total portrayal of me.
Yeah, that's like the actors who don't want to be killed on film. Or pro wrestlers that won't lose a fight. It's like, it's not real. Why do you care?
The regard for their legacy or something, maybe.
Yeah, but so it's a regard for them, not their body of work or their performances, just for them. And it's like, but nobody cares about that.
I'm glad Warren Beatty didn't get it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But it's so weird.
Remember when he ran for president? He was announcing he was going to run for president.
Did he?
Yeah, apparently so. In the mid-90s.
Wow. I probably didn't know.
Because he went like, oh, well, if Reagan can do it.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
Wow.
James Caan also, like, after taking the part... I read today that he turned down Jack Nicholson turned down James Caan's part in this movie, and James Caan turned down Nicholson's part in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. He was offered that first and turned it down.
I could never see that.
Both movies had a nurse in it that won an Oscar. That's cool, isn't it?
Yeah, that's quite cool.
So it's a weird character. He's very he's very quiet. He's not verbose at all for a writer. He doesn't talk much, only when spoken to. And he isn't as conniving as he could be to get out of his situation.
Yeah.
I think he's very complicit in...
He comes across very nice. Like, straight away, obviously he's glad and he saved him in the beginning.
As you would be.
Yeah. But he clearly knows, like, oh, this is a weird girl. He's not like, oh, this is a psychopath. He's like, but it's a strange girl that lives by herself. But he's really nice to her. Like, he offers for her to read the manuscript. Like, she doesn't ask. Like, he like, which, you know, most people wouldn't do that. Like, he's just a very nice, you do yeah, somebody I mean, saved like, your life.
Yeah, he's tied to a bed and he can't walk around. And yeah, she, yeah. But she comes in straight away with the lies and goes like, the phones are down,
yeah,
I can't get out, like all this kind of stuff. And as soon as he finds that out, then he's like, oh shit, okay, I have to appease her.
Yeah,
and that's when he offers for her to read the manuscript. Not straight away going, thanks for saving me, here you go.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's very odd, like, that then she goes into town and she buys The Misery's Child, the last book. And that's when you see her first flame of rage is she comes in and goes, how dare you, you killed him. And then later on she has another flame of rage when she has a bowl of soup. And yeah. She's like, ah, like it's very surprising. Like her bouts of rage are unexpected.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
But when they come, you know, like, oh like, yeah, so she's really into this thing. You know?
Again, I'm going to say every scene is my favorite scene.
Yeah.
But like when she tells the story about watching the serials.
Oh yeah.
And like how like she stood up and shouted at the projectionist that that's not happened last week,
yeah,
and stuff. It's fucking, that's such a great performance.
But it's also a really good note for a writer, because he kind of tried to write his way out of it and go like, oh yeah, she was it was a dream the whole time. Yeah, and she's like, no, it fucking wasn't. But yeah, that scene where she's like, and he was trapped in the car and he was rolling down the hill. And then suddenly he was just out of the car. Yeah, yeah.
And he wouldn't have liked The Descent Part 2.
Oh, fuck that, no.
Or they just...
She wouldn't have liked a lot of movies nowadays, man. Yeah. She'd be tying a lot of clowns to beds and breaking her ankles. But yeah, it's such a fucking, like, a have-to-watch movie. If you haven't watched this, watch it before they remake it.
Yeah.
I
would imagine what'll happen, because the It remake, I imagine, will be far better than the original. Because the original is actually a really crappy movie. Tim Curry.
A lot of them were. They just needed to crank it out because it was a Stephen King story. Yeah. And they knew, like, the Tommyknockers is a fucking, like, made for TV movie starring the lads from NYPD Blue.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know, Pet Sematary, the same. The Stand, like, those four movies are all, like, if they were made today, it'd be fucking unreal. Yeah, yeah.
Ben Affleck is meant to be redoing The Stand.
Yeah, it'd be amazing. But.
But I'd say it will do really well,
yeah.
And then a lot of people will be searching for Stephen King films on Netflix.
Yeah.
And
he's just a good story writer. This is the thing, like,
he is.
It's the finale for me, and the way that Buster tries to find what's happening, he finds it bit by bit, and you're like, oh, you know, that finale is very downplayed. It could be like a lot more, and it could be a lot more violent, and it could be
actually, and there's another difference, like it's much more violent in the book, and they would do that.
So what happens in the book then, tell us?
There's more cops are killed.
Yeah,
there's I think she kills like three or four people. She runs over Buster's character with a lawnmower, which that's pretty, that it doesn't really get more violent than that.
In the film she just shoots him with a shotgun.
Yeah, specifically, I mean, the specifics aren't really too important, but just like you were saying, yeah, it's much more violent and...
But it seems to be a production decision that the filmmakers made to go, okay, we can't make it exactly like the book because it costs too much.
Yeah, and I think for story, I think it's like, you know, you've got 2 hours tops with a movie, really.
Yeah.
Book, the book's 300 or 400 pages. It just makes for a more precise story to just... You know, instead of four cops, you have one and his wife being a deputy, and you make them somewhat comedic.
Yeah.
And you just have them get shot. Like, that's a simpler story. And, like, films kind of tend to have to do that.
Yeah, it's kind of like, let's fit it in.
Yeah.
If we can, you know. Have you got any other absolute standout favourite scene?
Well, I think we just mentioned every scene in the film as standout and our favourites. Like, what? Like, I think we've mentioned pretty much everything.
I like the one where she's getting on to him about burning his book. She finishes reading the parchment.
Yeah.
And she brings in the barbecue into the bedroom.
Yeah, actually. Oh, yeah.
And it's so menacing.
Yeah.
But it's not her being like, you dirty birdie.
Yeah,
it's her just being like, well, you wrote it.
Yeah, he's trying
to... It's not what I expected from you.
She's treating him like a child at that point. Oh, it's like, man, washing your mouth out with soap. Like,
he's
she's
stuck to the bed. He can't move, nothing. And she gets the new manuscript, puts in the barbecue, covers it in lighter fluid. And then she gives him a match and goes, light it and do the... And he's like, no. Like, why? And
he tries to call her bluff.
Yeah. He goes, I've got loads of copies and I have a copy with my you know, my publisher, and there's copies on the way to the thing, and she goes, I know you. And this was the moment when it turned for him, when he knew he was fucked.
Yeah.
And it's just the performance played back and forward. And I don't think that could be recreated. I think the focus in a remake, if it was to be made, would be more on the visuals and the special effects and that kind of, instead of being on those subtleties between those two characters. Yeah. So Kathy Bates is walking back and forward at the bottom of the bed, explaining why he has to burn the book. And while she's doing it, she's ever so subtly but very menacingly flicking lighter fluid onto the bedspread. Yeah. As if to say, like, if you don't do it, I'm going to set you on fire.
Yeah.
And then he lights the match and puts it in the barbecue, and the script goes up. Or the parchment, the novel, like, goes up in flames. Yeah, yeah. And then she, like, brings the barbecue out and then leaves him in the room. And he's just like, oh, fuck. But she calls his bluff and goes, like, I know you so well.
Yeah.
You don't do that because when you wrote your first book, you used to carry it around and you smoke one cigarette and have some Dom Perignon.
It's like, you had one manuscript because you didn't think anybody would want to read it. And now it's another superstition.
Oh, it's so weird.
And another favorite.
Like, his fault. His chink, the chink in his armor is his superstitions.
Yeah. Actually, you know, for they're all everything,
they're all the things that's how, like,
because that's why he drove in the snow too. Like, because that's how he done it the first time. So I never even thought of that part. But it's all the stuff he done, all the things, the superstitions and the habits he does as a writer.
Yeah,
is what gets him into trouble.
And Kathy Bates knows those things intimately.
Yeah.
Because she's his number one fan. And when you think back then to the way Stephen King described Kathy Bates' character as his drug addiction, those habitual things that you do if you're trying to give up some kind of, like, addiction to anything, if you keep on going on and making those same behaviors and hanging out with those same people and doing those same things, it ends up being, you know, if you're trying to give up smoking and you only smoke when you drink, then don't drink. If you're going to be drinking, you're going to be smoking.
Yeah.
So he's like, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Or if you want to quit smoking, but you only smoke, so you're only going to smoke when you drink, so you start drinking every day.
Yeah.
Like, it's that.
Like, are you an alcoholic then? Yeah, but I give up the smokes. Like, it's weird.
And like with Stephen King, a lot of his, like, his rituals, his habits that made him write were what then made him an addict. Like, he used to do drugs while writing. He has no memory of writing Cujo. Like, he just doesn't, he has no recollection of ever writing that book because he just was doing loads of drugs
while
writing it.
He done a good job, I suppose.
It's one of his best books.
I remember that scene from Almost Famous, you know, when Philip Seymour Hoffman as Lester Bangs is describing, like, how to be a good writer. He's like, get some speed, a little cough syrup, and you just take it and you stay up all night, man. Just write. Just for writing's sake, you know?
Completely off topic, but have you ever read Hunter S. Thompson's ritual, his writing ritual?
Oh, yeah. It's like a whiskey, a bong hit, some cocaine.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and the whole day he's just drinking and doing drugs. And then at 9 o'clock at night, he's like, start writing.
Yeah, Hunter S. Thompson is ready to write.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the day circles back at 3 a.m. and it's the same thing over. Yeah.
He only writes for 3 hours a day, but and he's fucking hammered all day. But that, you know, fucking Bukowski used to do the same thing, man. Drink three bottles of wine before he'd even put pen to paper. Like,
yeah,
sometimes you need it. Do you know, I'm sober for 6.5 years, so I'm good. But
so you're never going to be a writer.
Never. Can you imagine me being hammered doing a podcast? I don't think the control, like, to try and do the edits afterwards would be a nightmare. Yeah. I know there are lads who do podcasts and stream and drunk and stuff, but, like, I don't think I can.
Like, we'll have a few beers sometimes doing Disaster Artists, but I don't think we've ever.
You're not messy, though. You're not.
No, we've never. I don't think we've ever. There's been, like, one or two times where I've felt like, oh, I did have one beer too much. So we just, like, stopped for a half an hour and just
get a bit sober.
Yeah, went back to it. But another favorite, it's a very small moment, but it actually might be my favorite. Very early on, after he's used the bedpan to pee.
Yes, and she's shaking the bottle.
She's talking about marriage and just
shaking his piss.
It's fucking hilarious. Though. It's those subtleties. That's a real Coen's Brothers moment.
Another one that stood out to me was when she gathered her evidence and then accused Paul Sheldon of leaving the room, and he's like, no, I didn't. And she's like, yes, you did. That little penguin in the living room, he always faces due south. and he's turned around the wrong way. And you know when he puts it back the wrong way and the camera points at it, you're like,
you're right,
that's
yeah.
going to come back.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's just like, so now. And then she gives him the fucking sodium pentothal or whatever. And he's knocked out. And then she raids the room, takes his knife, takes all the drugs, takes all of his yeah. plans away. And goes like, you're a dirty birdie. We're going to make you do this thing. Like, it's so insidious, you know. The character's yeah. so good. So, you know, fingers crossed the remake won't be a heap of shit if they do make it. And it's bound to come, right?
Oh, it's definitely coming. It's
bound to come.
In some form.
Mm. Okay, so on Why Press Play, we like to give one reason why. So if somebody asks you why you watch Misery, this is the one reason you give them. Johnny from Disaster Artist, what's your one reason why you should watch Misery?
Catty Bates.
That's it?
That's it. Two words? Isn't that enough? That's okay, it. Yeah, fantastic.
I think you should watch Misery because it's the perfect execution of a story on film from start to finish. Like, there's no fat. There's no bit in the movie where you're, like, bored.
Yeah, yeah. It's a great example of an adaption absolutely. Done right.
Lean, perfect story. And there could be extra bits. I mean, obviously, you could put more bits in from the book.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But like in Carrie, like there's loads of bit left out, and like in any of the other adaptations, like it's all there's always
yeah.
Stephen King-isms that are left because it's a yeah, fucking it's 600 or 700 page book trying to fit.
It's
into
a different
an hour
medium anyway,
yeah,
you know.
Exactly.
Books are about what people feel and think. Yeah. Films are about what people say and do.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of the book is spent with Paul lifting his typewriter and working out and thinking.
That's a 90-second montage. Yeah. Like, you know. Yeah. So this is yeah. That's it. I mean, it's like a. A kind of a perfect movie, right?
Yeah, I think it and No Country for Old Men probably the two best adaptions ever.
Yeah,
but perfectly, like, different from the books, but close, very close. As in, took everything they needed, went their own way where it was warranted, and it's perfect translations.
And you're looking forward to the new It?
Very. I'm just curious. Like, we're at a good point.
The trailers looks class.
Yeah, we're at a good point where, like, the problem with. Like, a lot of Stephen King films were awful because...
Money.
Money, yeah. We're at a point now where people can do stuff from his books. So, doesn't seem like they're going that route with The Dark Tower all the same, but...
There's a lot of money behind that, man. Like,
no, I mean, with, like, doing what was in the book.
Yeah, no.
It seems like...
But they're looking at longevity. I mean, nobody's going to pitch, like, you could finish The Dark Tower in 4 seasons, but why only do 4, you know?
But I think they're doing the opposite. They're condensing, like, they're... It seems like, from the trailer, it looks like they're squeezed 3... It's a 7-book series,
yeah.
or an 8-book, and it seems like they squeezed 4 books into one.
I think it's going to go back and forth, that's the thing.
There's, yeah, well, again, yeah, the books kind of... Where the books end, you can kind of... There's this whole... Time's a flat circle and thing.
The same with Walking Dead. I mean, that was a really well-loved... graphic novel series that people were expecting like to move a lot faster than it did, and they really pulled the fucking arse out of it.
You see, in the trailer for Dark Tower, they give away something that doesn't come up until the end of the series of books. So you're like,
but that's the hook, though, maybe for Dark Tower, you know.
But
we'll have to reserve judgment and wait and see.
Yeah, but to give you an example, it would be like the first trailer for Game of Thrones before it came out.
Yeah,
if it showed you. I don't want to give spoilers for Game of Thrones, actually, on a podcast, not about it. But if it showed you who Jon Snow was related to in the trailer for, you know,
I guess. But it has to
show... Or if it showed a picture of Jon Snow sitting on the Iron Throne in the first episode. Yeah.
They do that in some of those things. They have a picture, like the season 7 thing is like Jon Snow sitting on the Iron Throne. Like,
but they wouldn't do it in season 1. They wouldn't show you it in season 1.
Yeah, I guess, maybe.
It's but not so
it's a
not
book
great,
that's out for 20 years, so... People know it's not like a fucking
it's Game of Thrones.
Anyway. So yeah, I mean, you got to watch Misery. It's one of those ones that just has to, it has to be done. Like Why Press Play, we're trying to recommend the best movies to watch. Some of the hidden gems that you might overlook because you're going, oh, this is fucking 30 years old. This shit is top notch.
Yeah,
and it might look like a little shit piecemeal, like. You know, most of it's done in one room kind of movie, and you may associate it with other Stephen King adaptations where there's like, you know, only a couple of thousand or a couple of tens of thousands put into it.
Yeah,
like it's like a made for TV movie style looking thing, but this is like Kathy Bates, James Caan, like fucking top.
Yeah,
top
it's all about spot. It's all about performance and character in this. It's
and we will do a live watch of the new It movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we could do that somewhere around here if we can find a copy of it, or maybe we could go into the cinema and do it.
Yeah, yeah. Just bring in a Zoom recorder into the cinema. They're not going to mind that.
No, not at all. But I just have like lavalier mics or something, you know?
And what we talk.
Yeah, shut up during the summer.
What's on?
Yeah, because I mean, you're my Stephen King right hand man. Like, you're the biggest Stephen King fan I know. So that's it for White Press Play for this time. That was Misery, directed by Rob Reiner, 1990. It's easy to find. It's on all of those streaming services and whatever. I don't think it's on Netflix or it's on
Hulu or Amazon. It went recently.
But I think you can find, there's a version on YouTube.
I don't think they're going to mind torrent and...
Rob Reiner's not missing out anyway at this point.
No.
But
Once you're not smoking, he doesn't care.
Exactly. Go and check out Misery. If you like this show and you want to reach out to us and tell us how great we are, or indeed subscribe to Disaster Artists and hear more from Johnny and from Shane about dystopian futures, you can check out Disaster Artists at Disaster Artists on Twitter. DisasterArtistsPodcast.com is the website, and they're on everywhere that you get podcasts, as are we. And if you're listening to this on iTunes or on any other app, try and go in and give us an old rating there, because it might not be worth a lot to you, but apparently the internet likes that stuff and we get put to the tops of lists of things. Which is great exposure for a new show. If you do like this show and you want to hear me or more of my old bullshit, we do also have a show called Those Conspiracy Guys, all about conspiracies and comedy, and we have loads of comedians as guests. If you want to get in contact with us about something we said in this show or something we got wrong, or maybe you want to join in the conversation, hit us up at info@whitepressplay.com. We're also on Discord, which is a messaging app, voice and text. And there's a whole community of people in there already talking about movies, TV shows, and computer games. We do stream computer games as well, like Mega Drive, SNES, classic like game, arcade games and stuff like that. And we do PS4 and Steam games. So we do like Rocket League, and at the moment I'm playing The Last of Us. So you can join in on twitch.tv/ypressplay. And we're on YouTube and VidMe with those videos as well. We will be streaming the show live at some stage and doing other... longer shows and kind of group shows with three of us, where we'll take, you know, a director, we'll take all of Rob Reiner's movies and go through them, or we'll take all of Tarantino's and go through them, or all the Stephen King adaptations and talk about them all at once.
Oh my god, that'd actually be kind of hell,
like 4 hours, man. I know, trying to watch all them, Jesus Christ,
you'd have to watch The Langoliers.
So if you want to get in contact with us on social media, we're on everything. White Press Play is what we're on. Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram. We're on Reddit. We have a subreddit as well, r/WhitePressPlay. And if you have any recommendation of movies you'd like to hear us talk
Pornhub, do you have a Pornhub?
We do have Pornhub and a U-Jizz. And
I've never even heard of
And a U-Jizz. Spank Bang as well. So yeah, we're on all of these. And like I said, if you like the show, please leave us a review. We're a brand new show from a set of podcast and oldies, with a successful show on the other side, but I'd like to make this one successful too. And we're going to be talking about movies, TV shows, and computer games all the time, in your ears as often as we can. Thanks for listening to White Press Play this time, and also thanks to Johnny from Disaster
Actors for having me.
We'll do more Stephen King soon, man.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Look forward to it.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Goodbye.